We dedicate our Divrei Torah to the Ilui HaNeshama of Alter Aryeh ben Yaakov Louis Keen, whose yard site is on Yud Tes Iyar, as well as to the memory of Yaakov ben Avraham Alav HaShalom, Jacob Keen, whose yard site is on Chaf Zayin Iyar. And we thank Nina Hirschberg for the generous sponsorship of this morning's shiur, and we hope that their neshamas will have an aliyah from the Divrei Torah that we share and study together this morning. Lag BaOmer is a very interesting day. Lag BaOmer has a lot of discussion in the poskim exactly what the simcha is all about. The Rama says that we have some kind of idea to be happy on Lag BaOmer, and that is why we omit tachnun in our davening this morning, but it's not entirely clear why Lag BaOmer is such a significant and special day. The Talmidei HaArizal have a tradition that today is the Yoma Dehilula of Reb Shimon Ben Yochai. Today is the day in which Reb Shimon Ben Yochai passed away. It's his yard site. Yoma Dehilula means it's the day of celebration. That's what a Hilula means. So isn't that strange? When somebody dies, when somebody passes away, we call it a Yoma Dehilula, a day of celebration. It should be a day which is pretty sad. Generally, when we observe a yard site, we're not particularly happy. It's something that makes us feel a little bit more down about what it is that we're experiencing. So why is it called the Yoma Dehilula if in fact this is the day that Reb Shimon Ben Yochai passed away? So tradition has it that there was a big celebration in heaven when Reb Shimon Ben Yochai finally came back to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to the Olam HaEmes. HaKadosh Baruch Hu celebrated together with all the Malachi HaShareis, and that is why we call it a Yoma Dehilula. When a great person passes away, we say, although it's very sad for all of us here, it is something that is very exciting up there, and that is why we refer to it sometimes as a Yoma Dehilula, as strange as that may sound. So many people use Lag BaOmer as a time to focus on Kabbalah, on Zohar, on mysticism. I'll be very honest, I personally don't know anything about these topics. I venture to say most people who sit in a room and listen to those who speak about these things also don't know what it means. Sometimes the speaker doesn't know what he's talking about either. But okay, there are those who spend the day focusing on what they call Pnimiyas HaTorah. I don't know what any of these things mean. However, you know, I feel in order to get to Pnimiyas HaTorah, you first have to learn the Chitzoniyas HaTorah, right? You first have to know a little bit about an understanding and knowledge of the simple parts of Torah that all of us are supposed to know. Unfortunately, I'm not there yet. So many times I've heard my father been asked, you know, do you learn Kabbalah? My father always answers, don't you have to be 40 to start learning Kabbalah? So, you know, someday we should all be zochet to grow up and to mature and to have the minds to be able to understand all of these ideas. But let's use the Hilula Dirashbi as an opportunity not to focus on Kabbalah or mysticism or things that we don't understand, but let us try to study and focus one of the teachings, one of the instructions of Reb Shimon Ben Yochai that I feel is relevant to our generation in Tufshin Pei Gimel 2023. So for those who just walked in, there are plenty of sheets on the Bima, and here's what we're going to talk about. We live in a world, it's no secret to any of us, we live in a world of extremes. A world where people lack nuance, where people don't have an understanding of the subtleties of life and perspective and context and objectivity. And one of the many consequences of today's hostile society is the feeling that people have a right and full license to shame and humiliate and destroy other people. You know, you'll hear about a story, it's totally unsubstantiated, totally uncorroborated, an accusation, something that you think happened, something that you imagine took place, and it goes viral before you verify any of the details or before you confirm what actually happened. And that's something that I find very often, you know, when people forward you a WhatsApp message or forward you a text or forward you a post, and they don't think twice before doing so. You know, somebody mistakenly sent you a text and wrote the wrong word. There was an autocorrect, and you think it's funny. So you forward it to someone else, and you take a screenshot, and then it goes around, and everyone starts laughing. How would you feel if that was you? How would you feel if that was you? Do we ever think about that? And it's so easy to destroy people just by sharing information that's not meant to be shared, by sending something along before we think twice about whether or not we should actually be doing that. So let's study a mimer of Reb Shimon Ben Yochai. Let's study something that Reb Shimon Ben Yochai taught us that should be in some way a guide to all of us today, in our society, in our generation. Says the Gemara Maseches Brachos, it can be found once again in Maseches Bab Metzia, a third time in Maseches Sota, a fourth time in Maseches Ksubas. It comes up four times because it's really important. Says the Gemara, Amar Rabbi Yochanan Mishum Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai. Here is an idea, here is a memra in the name of Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai. What does he say? Noach lo la'adam sheyapil atzmo letoch kivshan ha'esh. Says Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai, it would be more preferable to throw myself into a kivshan ha'esh, to throw myself into a furnace, va'al yalbim p'nei chaveiro barabim, instead of humiliating, instead of shaming and embarrassing another person, I should choose to kill myself. I should choose to destroy my own life. That's what he tells us. He learns it from a story in Chumash and Sefer Bereishis by Tamar and Yehuda, that Tamar was about to give up her life as not to shame Yehuda. We all know the story that happened there. And Tamar knew exactly that Yehuda was to blame. Yehuda did something wrong. And she stood up and she gave the evidence, but she did not disclose any information about who it was or what happened. All she said was, here's the evidence. And she was waiting for Yehuda to allow himself to come forward. She did not want to shame him, even if it would mean that she would be giving up her life. So much so, the Mishnah says in Pirkei Avos in the third parak, Kol ha'malbim p'nei chaveiro barabim, somebody who chooses to humiliate and shame, embarrass another person, afal pi sheyesh biyadu Torah masim tovim, I lived a whole life learning Torah and doing wonderful things and living an upstanding life as I should. Still, says the Mishnah, very fierce, very harsh, uncompromising punishment. Ein lo chelek le'olam haba. That's a very strong statement. Ein lo chelek le'olam haba. That's a very strong statement. Ein lo chelek le'olam haba means, even if I spend my whole life doing lots of good things, but you shame another person? Ein lo chelek le'olam haba. It's a story told about Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, who was known to be so careful in the areas of Ben Adam LaChavero, I guess not to the exclusion of Ben Adam LaMakom. He was very careful in all areas, but particularly he was known to be so sensitive and so kind and caring to other people. And on one occasion, a bunch of his students were together, and there was somebody who came and sat down at the table with them and started to sing. But it wasn't really somebody who anyone was interested in hearing sing. It was a homeless man from Yerushalayim who walked into the dining room and started shouting on the top of his lungs, thinking that he was going to make everybody enjoy his beautiful voice. And all the boys started to laugh. And Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach bit his tongue, held back his smile, and sat there and listened attentively to this man until he was finished. And after it was over, they turned to him and they said, how can you do that? Don't you understand? Like, this was so funny. And he turned to them and he said, how could you have done that? How could you have laughed at him? And they responded, it's natural. Something funny happens, we laugh. He said, but it's ritzicha. But you're killing someone. You're murdering him. How can you laugh when there's murder going on? I once read in the Maharsham, writes in the introduction to his Tshuva Sefer a very interesting story, that on one occasion there was an individual who, nowadays they call them little people. I think it's more offensive than saying midget, but I was told, I was corrected, not supposed to say midget anymore, so it was a little person. And it's not like today where we have on the internet, you see things from across the world, or you see things that are very unusual that you otherwise may not encounter in your own life. Back then, in the 1800s, this was something that was such an anomaly. If you saw such a thing, you were just amazed. You couldn't believe it. Well, after all, there is a bracha that we're supposed to make, Mishana Habrios. And the Maharsham describes that there was a very pious Jew who was there in the marketplace, and he sees this individual there, and he's so excited that for the first time in his life, he can make a bracha, Mishana Habrios, amazing. And he says he goes up to this individual, and he makes a beeline straight through the marketplace to get to him, and he picks him up, and he says, Tafas oso nanas kalulav. He picks him up like a lulav, like when you make a bracha on a dalad minim, you start shuckling and you're holding it in your hands. And he picks him up and he's so excited to make this bracha and he's having all of his kavana, mishana habrios. And he says, instead of paving himself a path into Gan Eden, he paved himself a golden path into Gehenim that he'll never get out of. Look at the shame, humiliation that you caused this person. And says Rav Shimon ben Yochai, Noach lo la'adam, Sheyapil atzma letoch kivshan ha'esh, we should be more comfortable. We should actually feel that that's a better choice, to throw ourselves into a fire, to destroy our own lives. This teaching of Rav Shimon ben Yochai has the echo, the voice of his great legendary teacher, Rabbi Akiva. What do we all know from Rabbi Akiva? We know Rabbi Akiva is the one who said, That's famous from Rabbi Akiva. But what else did Rabbi Akiva say? Rabbi Akiva says in Pirkei Avos, Chaviv Adam Shenivra B'Tselem. Chiba Yisera No Daslo Shenivra B'Tselem Elokim. Man is considered valuable because we were created B'Tselem Elokim, says Rabbi Akiva. How do you not give value and respect and recognition, acknowledgement to someone else's life? How do you not understand that that person is also deserving of the benefit of the doubt? That person is also deserving of our respect? Do you not understand that that person is inherently, fundamentally good? That HaKadosh Baruch Hu created them with some kind of purpose and quality and significance, substance in life? What it is, I don't know. But says Rabbi Akiva, this is what every one of my students needs to understand. Don't we celebrate on Lag BaOmer because we just finished the Misas Talmidei Rabbi Akiva? Now that it's over, what did Rabbi Akiva teach the next group of students? Well, we know after Rabbi Akiva's 24,000 students died, he goes and he gathers five, and he's willing to start over. But you know what the first thing he said to them was, the Medrash says? He turned to all of them and told them the story of what had happened before. And he said, Atem al tiyu kimosam. Don't be like them. Don't be like them. And this statement of Reb Shimon Yochai has the voice and the echo of his great teacher, Rabbi Akiva, because it's something that resonated. Rabbi Avadi Yosef has a tshuva where he discusses this idea of having a Purim spiel on Purim, where we make fun of people. And sometimes we humiliate them. And sometimes we really embarrass them. And he gets into the origins of where this comes from and the merits, or I should say the demerits, of such an idea. And he analyzes the whole sugya, as he always does for everything. In the end, he quotes an unbelievable story about Reb Shimon Sofer, who was the son of the Chassam Sofer. Listen to his words. He writes that Reb Shimon Sofer niftar meirov agmas nefesh ekev divrei albono shehutchu klapav al yidei Rav Purim. They had a Purim spiel. Everyone was having a good time. Reb Shimon Sofer was the Rosh Hashiva. He was the Rav of the town. And they made fun of him to such an extreme, he died from the embarrassment. He actually died from the embarrassment. It was so humiliating. He died from it. Now you can say, okay, don't take it so personally. You can say all these things. But he did. And he actually died, says Rav Avadia. That's the story. V'Hashem Atov Yechaper Ba'ad Kulam, he says. HaKadosh Baruch Hu should forgive all those people. Look what they did. Look what they caused. Now, the result, the outcome is not always that extreme. But still, says Rav Shimon ben Yochai, just because a person doesn't die doesn't mean it doesn't affect them. When we do halbanas panim, when we embarrass, when we shame someone else, we need to understand the implication of what it is that we are doing. The Rambam and other Rishonim try to understand what is the source of this prohibition of halbanas panim. Says the Rambam, we have a prohibition in the Torah. Actually, it's a mitzvah. Hocheach tochiach es hamisecha. We have an obligation that when somebody is doing something wrong, doesn't mean a person who we have no relationship with. It means somebody who we have something to do with, and we think that maybe they will be influenced if we share a good word with them, if we try to set them straight. Recently, somebody told me a story. I'm having such a hard time wrapping my head around it. They were telling me the story for the positive part. I only heard the negative part, and I couldn't focus on the good part of it. So they told me they were away for Pesach, and they are Kohanim, they're a family of Kohanim, and they have an adopted child, an adopted son, who's now, I don't know, 19 or 20 years old, 18, something like that. He's not a young child, he's already an adolescent. And they were in a particular shul. Now the father is a Kohen, and his son is not, because the son is adopted. So the father goes up to do Birchas Kohanim, and the son stayed behind. So it's a little embarrassing, a little humiliating, but who's paying attention? Okay, he stayed behind. When his father came back, he turned to his father and he said, Yashar Koach Abba, which is what you normally say to a Kohen. And there was an elderly person sitting next to them, the row behind, who turned to him and he said, you know, it's not really right that you don't go up with your father. And someday you'll grow up and you'll understand the right thing to do. And just because davening is hard for you doesn't mean you should stay back. You should really go up with your father. It's a very unusual opportunity. Now, they told me the story because they were so impressed that their son turned back to this man and said, "Thank you so much. I appreciate your concern." And went back to his seat. So that's why they told me the story. I didn't hear that part. All I heard was, "What a jerk. What's wrong with you? What business do you have? These people are visiting your community for Yom Tov. You don't know them. You never met them, never spoke to them. And you turn to their son who's 18 years old and you think it's your job to tell them off, to tell them how to live, to tell them what to do. Who do you think you are? Why do you think it's your place?" Forgetting about the fact what humiliation he just said to this kid and how amazed I am at this child for the way he responded. But who are you? Why are you getting involved? His father is there. His parents are in the room. Let them figure out what to do with him. It's not our job. But we do have a job. Hocheach tochiach es hamisecha. When it's somebody that we have a relationship with, that it's our responsibility to help them out, we should do so. And in doing so, meaning, it's my own child. It's somebody who probably would expect me to say something to them, or who would appreciate it overall, in the long run. Even in doing so, when I have an obligation of ocheach tochiach, still says the pasuk in the end of the words, "Velo sisa alav chet." When doing so, when being mochiach another person, when admonishing them, when rebuking a person who deserves to be rebuked, "Lo sisa alav chet," make sure not to embarrass them. But what do you mean? They're doing something wrong. Says the Rambam. He points out the obvious, but he says, "Lefikach tzarach adam lehizar shel levayish chaver barabim bein katon ubein gadol." Doesn't make a difference if it's a child or it's an adult. In fact, they say it's even worse when it's a child. There's a famous story that's told about the stipler, that he once felt that he humiliated a young child who came to talk to him about something. On the day of that kid's bar mitzvah, the stipler showed up to the bar mitzvah. He wasn't invited. Nobody had told him about it. Everybody was shocked to see the Gadol HaDor at the bar mitzvah. What's he doing here? And he walked over to the child and he said, "When you were a young boy, I feel that I slighted you. I feel that I embarrassed you. But when you were a child, I didn't have the ability to ask you mechila because you really wouldn't understand what that really meant. You didn't understand the severity of the shame and you didn't understand what it means to actually be mochel someone. And I wrote it down. I kept it in mind. And I asked and I inquired about you. And on your bar mitzvah is the first opportunity that I have to ask you mechila. Now you're an adult. Now maybe you'll understand. Now maybe you can forgive me." So, this, says the Rambam, is something we need to be very careful about, not only when we talk about a gadol, one of our friends, a people in our own peer group, but even a child. We need to be so careful, even when admonishing a child, to do so in private, to do so quietly, to do so in a way that's not going to shame them in front of others, in front of their other siblings, is the same. We have to be so careful. There is a discussion among the Rishonim how literally we should take this comment of Reb Shimon ben Yochai. Says Reb Shimon ben Yochai, as we started, "Noach lo la'adam sheyapil atzmo letoch kivshon ha'esh v'al yalbim penei chaveir barabim." Really? Is he really meaning to take this literally? We should be willing to kill ourselves as not to shame and embarrass another person? Is that really what it means? Well, some Rishonim say that's just a guzma ba'alma, it's derech tzachus. He's exaggerating. He's just trying to emphasize a point. It doesn't really mean you should kill yourself instead of embarrassing someone else. He just means you have to understand how serious this is. And we have to give thought before we say something, before we open our mouths, before we share something. But a number of Rishonim, a number of great and very prominent Rishonim, take it very literally. And they say that no, Reb Shimon Yochai really means what he said. Noach lo la'adam sheyapil atzma letoch kivshan ha'esh. We should be willing to kill ourselves. Va'al yalbim p'nei chaver barabim. Now that's strange. Ask the Balei Atosas and Maseches Sota. Isn't that strange? We know that there are only three averus in the Torah that I have to be willing to give up my life for. Avodah Zarah, Gilui Arayos, and Shvichas Damim. This is not one of those, so why should I give up my life? And Tosa says the answer is, this is part of Shvichas Damim. This is the same. If I'm asked to go kill someone else, I'm not allowed to do so. I have to be willing to give up my life as not to kill them. Well, if I'm asked to shame somebody else, I have to be willing to give up my life as not to do so. It's the same. It's ritzicha. It's murder. You're destroying someone's life. You're killing them. So much so, Rabbi Shlomo Zalman Auerbach has a shocking, amazing tshuva, where he says, as we know, if somebody's life is in danger on a Shabbos, pikuach nefesh is docha kola tarakula. We know that you're allowed to be mechal Shabbos to save a life. In fact, it's not even called chilul Shabbos. I'm observing Shabbos the way I'm supposed to, under these conditions, under these circumstances. Ask Rabbi Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, what would the halacha be if I know that somebody's being killed down the block, and I have the ability to try to save them? Should I step in? Of course I have to. I have to try to save them. Again, I shouldn't endanger my own life. But if I know how to deal with the situation, I'm a police officer. I'm a retired cop. So now I'm really not on duty, but I know how to take care of such a thing. I have to jump in. I have to get involved and save the person's life. Ask Rabbi Shlomo Zalman, what would happen if you find out that on Shabbos somebody's about to be humiliated and terribly shamed? Would I be allowed to be mechal Shabbos to save somebody from busha? To save somebody from terrible public shame? Would that warrant chilul Shabbos? He actually gets into a real discussion about it. To me, the discussion itself is phenomenal. The fact that he even thinks about a question like that is amazing. That's the sensitivity of Rabbi Shlomo Zalman Auerbach. But it teaches us so much about what this means in the context and the purview of halacha itself. And just imagine, as severe as public shaming may have been in the times of Chazal and Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai, how much of a public shaming could they have done to someone already? How big of a gathering did they have? You know, I always find it interesting, my father likes to mention, that the Rama very often in Shulchan Aruch writes, in our community, this is what we do. V'hachina aginan, this is what we do, this is how we do it. Many different times throughout the pages of Shulchan Aruch, he'll write that. So you think, how big is the Rama's shul when he says, in our shul, this is what we do? Anybody here ever been to Krakow? Right? How big is the Rama's shul? Smaller than the smallest minyan we have here. Right? Smaller than the smallest space of a shtibel that we have in our community. That's the Rama's shul. And he says, this is our minog, this is what we do, this is what the shul does. And that has become minog Yisrael. How many people showed up to the Rama's shul? 50? 100? How many people were there? Maybe? On the best week, 100 people showed up? So, what did it mean to have a public gathering in the times of Chazal? How many people were there? Al Yabim Pene Chaver Barabim back then may have meant one thing. Imagine today how amplified, multiplied that is when we talk about digital shaming in our generation. What you can do to a person in an instant, in a second, to the entire world. You can expose somebody's fault to the whole world in 1 second. What would Rav Shimon Yochai say today? If he said back then, Noach lo la'adam sheyapil atzma letoch kivshan ha'esh v'al yalbim p'nei chaver baram, and we're talking about a rabbim that's not so large. Imagine today what he would say, posting on Facebook, sharing somebody's mistaken message that they shared with you, exposing somebody's mistake. Do you never make a mistake? Have you never made a mistake in your life? You have. Just nobody's ever videoed it. Nobody's ever taken a picture of it. Wait till it's you. It's hard. But think about it from that perspective. I want to read you, you know, there's a best-selling author. Many of us have read different snippets of things that he's written. Many, many books that he's written. 40 million copies he's sold. Mitch Albom. Mitch Albom wrote about digital shaming. He wrote about lots of different things. When I saw this article, I was so taken by the profundity of what digital shaming is all about. I know there are some in this room that don't even know what I'm talking about. They don't know what digital shaming is. But for those of you who do know what I'm talking about, hang in there. For those who don't, I'll be back to you in 3 minutes. Okay. So Mitch Albom writes the following. I remember, he says, when they used to say in a classroom, go stand in the corner. Right? Who remembers that? Go stand in the corner. Another form of student punishment. You could sense the eyes of all your classmates on your back as you wiggled with a hot flush of embarrassment through the classroom. Sometimes you stood there for an hour. At least it felt like an hour. These were ways, even for kids, to be publicly humiliated. The idea was, if you shame somebody in front of their peers enough, they will think twice about repeating the offending behavior again the next time. Correct? So we are all familiar with this concept. Today, contrast that with today. Today, somebody parks over the yellow line in a parking lot, take a picture of their license plate, share it on Facebook with all your friends so that everyone can mock them. You don't like an email you got from your child's teacher? Make sure you post it on Reddit. We live in an attention-seeking, social media-driven world where people thrive on getting their 15 minutes or going viral. We crave the validation, the approval, the attention in order to feel seen, heard, or understood. We want to be noticed and liked, but where does that end? And what is the price of all this public shaming, especially when our children are sometimes involved? We don't always think of the consequences of sharing that photo or posting that video. We forget that there is a person, a family, a child who is impacted by converting a private mistake into a public flogging. There are lives at stake when we do so. These are actual people. The speed at which information can travel, the frequency of anonymous shaming, the size of the audience it can reach, the permanence of the information separate digital shaming from any shaming that we have ever seen in the past. Being the victim of a public shaming has the potential to ruin your life financially, emotionally, and physically. In the most extreme cases of online harassment, we have seen the worst case repercussions over and over again. Young people who have taken their own lives and adults losing their livelihoods, all because they were publicly shamed. The amount that this has been magnified in our generation is astounding. And if Reb Shimon Yochai were alive today, I don't know what he would say. But it's far more extreme than anything he ever could have possibly imagined. It goes in both directions. The amount of good we can do by posting something nice, by saying something positive, is also way beyond anything we could ever have imagined. My father often tells me, what a schus it is to be teaching Torah in this generation. Why is it a schus? Well, it's always a schus to teach Torah. But in this generation, who would have ever imagined you can teach people on the other side of the world? You can have an influence on people that you've never met, never will hear from, never will see. This was something that was unimaginable a generation ago. Not even a generation ago, 20 years ago, 30 years ago. My father tells me that there used to be someone who would tape his shiur every day with a tape recorder. How do you get a copy of the tape? If you happen to know someone who was there and they were nice enough to make you a copy, then you got it. Otherwise, you were left out of these experiences. There's no such thing as the unbelievable, unprecedented Harbatzas Torah that we have today, but it goes in both directions. It goes in both directions. There's so much good that we can do. There's so much that can happen because of the tools that we've been given in our generation, but there's so much bad. There's so much negativity we can bring into the world also at the same time and in the same way. As we mentioned, Reb Shimon Yochai was extremely sensitive to the issue of malbim p'nei chaveru b'rabim, of humiliation, of public shaming, of being careful with people's sensitivities. And yet, there's another Maimar Chazal that is attributed to Reb Shimon Yochai that highlights the same issue. Let's see what the Gemara tells us in Maseches Sota Daf Lamed Beis. Not connected to the first, but obviously very much the same theme. Psukim tell us, Chana was begging to have a child, and we're told that on one occasion she comes to the Beis HaMikdash to offer a tefillah. And the Navi says, V'chana hi midaberes al liba. Now the simple understanding is, Chana was giving a heartfelt and very sincere tefillah. Midaberes al liba means she was speaking from the heart. But the Gemara understands it a little bit differently. And it says that Eli HaKohen, upon seeing that Chana was midaberes aliba, vayachshevea lishikora, he thought she was drunk. So what does that mean? Why did he think she was drunk? What was she doing? So the Gemara assumes that it means she was speaking softly. She was mumbling to herself. Now, who normally talks to themselves? Somebody who's drunk. And therefore, Eli had no other conclusion other than to say, this woman must be drunk. I don't know what she's doing. And he approaches her. And it turns out, no, she wasn't drunk. She was actually offering a tefillah. And from there is born the concept of davening quietly, of davening privately when we have the opportunity to daven Shmona Esrei. We offer the tefillah silently. It's between us and HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Nobody else needs to hear. Nobody else is supposed to hear. Says the Gemara as follows. Maseches Sota Lamed Beis Amud Beis. Let's see here. Amar Rabbi Yochanan Mishum Reb Shimon Ben Yochai. The same Reb Shimon Ben Yochai. What does he say? Mipnei ma. Tiknu tfila belachash. Why is it that we learn from Chana and now we do the same? Why do we offer a tfila quietly? Why is it in silence? Now, you could say, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu is shomea tfila. He hears us. We don't need to scream. We don't need to shout. But it's not just that. It's much more than that. It's much deeper than that. The Gemara says it's not just that I have the option whether or not I want to daven out loud. It's you're supposed to specifically daven quietly. Why? Says the Gemara, Shelo levayish es ovrei avera. Because we have to be mindful of the people who may have done something wrong. And they're going to be so ashamed or humiliated if everybody has to daven out loud. And this person in the middle of Shemona Esrei is going to say, Slach lanu. And they're going to incorporate in that part of the tefillah something that they've done wrong, a specific avera. Now everybody else is going to hear. Shalom levayish es ovrei avera. We're all going to daven silently. First of all, don't be embarrassed by a show of hands. When was the last time you ever inserted into your tefillah? Ever. You know, God, last night I spoke Lashon Hara. Please be mochel me. You do. Other than you. Right? So lots of other people. You never spoke Lashon Hara anyway. You did something else. We put things into the tefillah when we need a refuah, when somebody needs a parnasa, when somebody needs a shidduch. We're familiar with such things. We add things into our tefillah. Have you ever added into your tefillah, into the paragraph of Slach Lanu or Hashivenu Avinu L'Sarasecha, you know, God, I'm trying to do tshuva, but I'm struggling with this issue. I really don't know what to do. It's no different than asking for a shidduch, asking for a parnasa, asking for a refuah. If you have a particular problem, you should insert it into the davening. This is your problem. If you have a problem, you should talk about it. Okay, says the Gemara. Assuming that that's what everybody does during Shemona Esrei all the time, because what else would we do when we say Slach Lanu? Just say the generic words? No way. We all do things wrong. We all have things to talk about. So of course, when we say Slach Lanu, we're going to include something about a mistake that we have made, about an avera that we have done, a crime we've committed, whatever it is. We're afraid that someone's going to be humiliated. Someone else is going to overhear my conversation, says Rashi. What's going to happen? Forgot to put it on here. Hamisvadim. Oh, alavera sheviyada. Rashi writes, what's going to be the humiliation? Everyone's going to hear when I say vidui. Everyone's going to hear when I enumerate all of my problems, all of my issues. It's going to be embarrassing. And therefore, we don't want that people should daven out loud. Amazing. Amazing Gemara. Where the Gemara is basically teaching us how careful we need to be with people's feelings, even when it's something they're being misvada. Even when they're saying to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I'm sorry, I need to do tshuva. But that's embarrassing. Which is why the Pasuk says in Parshas Tzav, B'makom asher tishchat ha'ola tishachet ha'chatas lefnei Hashem. When somebody brings a carbon ola and somebody else brings a carbon chatas. An ola is because I feel so connected, because I love the Ribono Shel Olam. A chatas is because I feel I've done something wrong and I need to do tshuva. Both of those people come to the same place in the Beis HaMikdash. Why? Shouldn't we have a separate section? The answer is no. Because we don't want to embarrass somebody who's coming to offer a carbon chatas. It will be recognizable, it will be obvious if he walks to the other side of the Beis HaMikdash. Oh, that's where the Bali Avera go. Oh, you were Mechal Shabbos last week. Tell me what happened. Says the Pasuk, no. The Karban Ola and the Karban Chatas end up in the same place in the Beis HaMikdash. Both individuals come to the same location because we don't want to embarrass or shame anyone. There is an absolutely amazing story. Amazing. Before we get to that, the Rambam writes, one has to be so careful when you encounter a Baal Tshuva. A Baal Tshuva can mean, as we're familiar with the term Balei Tshuva today, a Baal Tshuva that the Rambam's talking about is not really that. It's talking about somebody who did something wrong and then does tshuva. All of us. We're all Balei Tshuva, or we should be, aspiring Balei Tshuva. Says the Rambam, look here in number Beis, Im Haya Baal Tshuva, if somebody successfully does tshuva, Lo Yomar Lo, don't you dare ever say to that person, Zechar Ma'asecha HaRishonim. I remember when we were in school together, I remember what happened. I remember this story, that story, the other thing. It's embarrassing. Why would you bring that up? Why would you say that? You ever see parents sitting around the table talking about their kids when they were younger? Why would you bring up that story? You know it's going to embarrass the kid. Why would you say that? Yes, it's cute. It's funny. It's cute and it's funny for you. It's not cute and funny for the kid. Why would you say that? Why would you share it? Says the Rambam, to tell a person, Zechar ma'asecha rishone, to tell a person, I remember back when you were this, when you were that, when you had behaved this way or that way, I was immature, I made a mistake. I did something wrong. I moved on. Why would you bring that back into my life, says the Rambam. So listen to this amazing story. About 1,000 years ago, Rabbeinu Gershom was known as Ma'or HaGola, the light onto the Golus. So he was a very significant personality. In fact, Rashi writes that Rabbeinu Gershom was the major influence on all the Gedolei HaRishonim of his generation. They all consider themselves to be somewhat influenced by him, Talmidim of his. We have some of the Takanos of Rabbeinu Gershom. He's probably most famously known for prohibiting polygamy. He's the one who came up with that idea. He's the one who said that a husband is not allowed to divorce his wife without her consent. There has to be some kind of mutual understanding. He can't just walk into the house one day and give his wife a get. That's unacceptable. Different things that Rabbeinu Gershom instituted because he wanted the community to be safe. He wanted women to be protected. He wanted marriages to be sacred. Different things. So here's the story with Rabbeinu Gershom. There was a Kohen, Sheneshtamid. There was a Kohen who became an apostate. Totally off. He went to serve Avodah Zarah. In the days of the Rishonim, there was a lot of this going on. Not just that he went off the derech, but he became a part of another religion. And the question came to Rabbeinu Gershom at this point, after a couple of years serving this other Avodah Zarah, this other religion, he decided it was time to come back. And he did a full and complete tshuva. And he reintegrated himself into the community, and he showed up to shul, and he's davening with everyone else, and he's living a religious lifestyle, and he's doing everything that the rest of the members of the community are doing. And the question became, are we allowed to give him the aliyah of Kohen any longer? Are we allowed to have him duchen whenever the Kohanim go up? Can he join them? Or maybe we should say, look, he did tshuva, but he has tainted his soul, and he's done something so terrible by serving Avodah Zarah that he no longer has a right to get the first aliyah. He no longer has a right to go up with the Kohanim by Nesias Kapai. That was the question that was asked to Rabbeinu Gershom. Okay, Rabbeinu Gershom gets into a long discussion about this case. And he says, Afal pishachata, kivin she'asa tshuva, roi lalos leduchan v'lisa kapav. His conclusion in the end of the day is, even though he did something terrible, and he's going to have to pay a price for what he did, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu will work it out with him, but right now, as far as we're concerned in the community, he deserves to have a place like everybody else, and we should not cut him out. Now, throughout the response on the issue, Rabbeinu Gershom goes into a detailed exchange about this question and whether or not it makes sense to include him, or maybe we should just cut him out and exclude him from everything that goes on in the community as far as Kohanim are concerned. Fine. Rabbeinu Gershom writes the following. Look at the second paragraph. Va'od, nimtzeis. It turns out, atamar pe yedeim shabalei tshuva v'lo nachon lasos kein. V'im tomar lo yala leduchon v'lo yikra b'torah tchila maharer b'libo b'shmad v'oyla la'osa busha oyla la'osa klima v'yimna me'asos tshuva. Number one, he says, who's ever going to want to do tshuva again if I know after all the hard work and all that I did to come back and reintegrate myself, no one's going to accept me anyway. So why should I do tshuva? I'll just stay the way I am. So you're going to push people away. That's number one. That individual person has to deal with their mistakes, with their problems, with the poor choices they made. They'll deal with it. But us as a community should punish them? Who are we to punish them? That's number one. But number two, he says, doesn't the Rambam tell us, he was before the Rambam, but doesn't the Rambam say, to turn to a person and say, Zechar ma'asecha harishonim, turn to a person who does tshuva and say, I remember what you did. I remember when you were younger. I remember your process, your journey. That's a terrible sin. Says Rabbeinu Gershom, if you're going to tell a person, you can't get the first aliyah, You're not allowed to come up with the Kohanim, and everybody knows he's a Kohen. Can there be a worse situation of public humiliation and shame than that? Everybody in the shul is looking at this person, wondering why they're not joining the rest of the Kohanim. So this is something that Rabbeinu Gershom felt was very, very important. Because shame and humiliation can be destructive to a person. It can eat a person up alive. It can destroy their lives. It's why we daven multiple times in the tefillah. Shelo nevo shvelo nikaleim le'olam v'ed. We ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu, don't allow us to be embarrassed. Don't allow us to be ashamed. There are so many situations that we can be put into where we can be very publicly humiliated, and it's really hard when that happens. It's hard when that happens. Next time you read an article in the newspaper, think twice about sharing it. I am the son of a person who is attacked mercilessly in the newspapers all the time. Yes, my father is attacked all the time. Nothing happened this week. Last time I said that, someone said, oh, what happened? Nothing happened this week. There's no reason for him to be attacked. If you know my father, you know he's the softest, kindest person there is. Most sincere and gentle, sensitive personality who cares about everyone and kills himself for the Jewish people. And yet, there are people who hate him. And they go out to the papers and they destroy him. Guess what? He doesn't care. I'm always amazed how little he cares. He always says to me, they go and attack me, I'll get them back, I won't read it. That's his response. You should know how hurtful it is to us. I'm not a big tzaddik. He is. Doesn't bother him. Destroys people. You go and you share it. Uncorroborated stories. Things that are taken out of context. Things that never happened. We all know that what we see on the news is all skewed. We all know from other news outlets and agencies that everybody has their own angle and everybody has a perspective and everyone's trying to sell papers. How could you share an article like that? How can you share an article that's destroying people? Why would you do that? It's destroying people who haven't even done anything wrong most of the time. Why would you share it? Why would you forward it? You know, my father once told me that Rabbi Charlap told him. They grew up in the Bronx together. Rabbi Charlap is older than my father. But we say, every time we bench Rosh Chodesh, we say a special tefillah. It's called Tefillas Rav. A paragraph that we say before we usher in the new month. So my father told me that there was a story in the Bronx that there was a Yid from Europe who came and he davened for the Amud one month when they were benching Rosh Chodesh. And he got up and instead of saying Chaim She'ein Bahem Busha Uchlima, he got up and he said Chaim She'yesh Bahem Busha Uchlima. He was asking that we should live a life of shame and humiliation. So everybody started screaming the wrong word, Chaim She'ein Bahem. And he said, what do you mean? Chaim She'yesh Bahem. Turns out that in Europe there were two different minhagim, two different customs about what to say. Most Sidurim have it the way we know it, which is Chaim She'ein Bahem Busha Uchlima. We ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu to give us a life where we're never going to be ashamed, we're never going to be humiliated, we'll never be embarrassed. That's what we daven for. But there were others who had a very different tefillah. Because a healthy dose of shame is also good sometimes. Not that other people should shame us, but that we should have some sense of shame. We should understand that we have enough value not to humiliate ourselves. You know, I started teaching in Stern College this year, and therefore I'm on the train every so often and walking through the streets of Manhattan. You look around at some of these people and you ask yourself, do you have no shame? The answer is yes, they actually have no shame. They have nothing to live for. Why should I be shameful? I've gotten to rock bottom. I'm homeless. I have nothing. Nobody in the world cares about me. So why shouldn't I humiliate myself? What's left? My self-dignity? I have no dignity. I have nothing. And you see it all the time. A healthy dose of shame, a healthy dose of busha uchlima is also not a bad thing. Not that other people should humiliate or shame us, but we should have some shame for our value of who we are and what we represent. which is why the Gemara says in Maseches Yevamos there are three essential primary character traits of what it means to be a Jew. Rachmanim, Baishanim, V'gomlei Chasadim. In our essence, we're Gomlei Chasadim, we're kind people, we're supposed to be kind and understanding of others. But Baishanim is one of them, to be a person who has shame. A person who feels, I have some self-value, some self-worth. I would never do that. It's beneath my dignity. I would never share that because it's beneath my dignity to share that. I would never speak this way because it's beneath the dignity of who I am and what I represent, what my family is, to say such a thing, to speak in such a way, to act and behave in that way, to dress this way. Yes, it's beneath me. I have some shame. I have some busha. So, let's read a little story in Tanakh. We'll close with this. It's an amazing story. It's an amazing story about one of the evil kings. We're told that Ahaz was an evil king. He lived at the time when the Navi was trying to advise him that this is the way the community, the country should be run, should be led. And he decided to be defiant. He was provocative. He wasn't going to listen. He wasn't going to hear it. He did things his own way. And although the Navi kept coming to him and telling him, this is what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants, this is what God wants and expects of us, he wasn't interested. He did things his own way. At some point, he felt he needed to make a peace treaty with the enemy, even though the Navi told him not to. He sold out all the Otzros Beis Hashem. He emptied out all the coffers of the Beis HaMikdash. And he sold it all to the enemy in order to make peace with them. Okay. Yeshaya HaNavi tells him the following. Yavi Hashem Alecha Va'alamcha Va'al Beis Avicha. You know what's going to happen. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to bring something terrible upon you. Yamim Asher Lo Bo L'miyom Sur Ephraim Al Yehuda Es Melech Hashur. There's going to be such a catastrophe, such a calamity, so much misery and devastation. You've never seen such a thing in your experience on this earth. That's what's going to happen as a result of your decisions, Ahaz. Okay? So this is what's happening. In the background, Ahaz was not only defying the words, the wishes of the Navi, Ahaz was also a pretty terrible person on his own right. And we're told, in Melachim Beis, the Torah tells us here in Number Zayin, V'gamez b'no hever ba'esh kitovas ha'goyim asher horish Hashem osam epnei b'nei Yisrael. Ahaz decided to sacrifice his children to Avodah Zarah. He burned them alive and sacrificed them to another religion. V'hikter b'gei ben henom, he brought sacrifices to the Avodah Zarah, not only his children, but this was something that was constant in his life. He was an Oved Avodah Zarah, even though he was the Jewish king. An Oved Avodah Zarah. Not only that, as if we haven't heard enough about the terrible choices and decisions of Melech Ahaz, the Navi then goes on to describe a little bit more. Melachim Beis, Perek Tazayin, Vayizabeach, Vayakter, Babamos, Vaalagvos, Vesachas, Kal Eitz, Ra'anan, Uvechal Ir Ve'ilu Yehuda Asabamos, he establishes, he constructs Beis Avodah Zarah all over the place. He builds Mizbechos all over the country, that everyone should have the opportunity to serve Avodah Zarah in their backyard. Shouldn't have to travel. Should be easy. And this is what Ahaz did. He destroys the Beis HaMikdash, parts of it, cuts down the walls, cuts down the doors. So much so that when his son, Chizkiyo HaMelech, who was a big tzaddik, who was a great individual, when he came along, he was so ashamed of the way his father had lived his life. The Gemara tells us that Girer Mitas Aviv, he dragged his father's coffin through the streets to get a kapara for his father, for the terrible things that he had done in his life. And Chizkiyo HaMelech tries to turn it around, to turn the Jewish people around. All of this is the background to the following Mishnah. We have a very beautiful comment of the Mishnah, Maseches Sanhedrin, Kol Yisrael Yesh Lahem Chelek La'olam Haba. Amazing. Every Jew has a place in the world to come. Very reassuring feeling. Everything's going to be good. Everything's great. What we don't like to talk about is the end of that line. It says, Kol Yisrael Yesh Lahem Chelek La'olam Haba. Everyone has a portion in the world to come, except for the following people. And if you're in the category of those people, you will not have a portion in the world to come. So we don't like to say that part. So we say at the beginning, every yid's a big tzaddik, right? Beautiful song, such a silly song. Every yid is not a big tzaddik. Some people are tzaddikim. Some people are rishayim. Some people are terrible people. Let's acknowledge that. Some people actually do things wrong in this world. It's not every yid's a big tzaddik, right? So what happens? Says the Mishnah, Kol Yisrael yesh lahem chelek l'olam haba, except for a number of people. Says the Rambam, who are those people? Someone who's kofar b'Torah, someone who denies the authenticity of Torah, someone who is a baal lashon hara. It doesn't say somebody who speaks lashon hara. We all make mistakes. A baal lashon hara means somebody who really is very involved in this. Ein lo chelek l'olam haba. Says the Rambam, machtiei harabim. Somebody who causes other people to do sin, to do wrong. Now, Achaz was certainly one of those people. Now, the Mishnah lists a couple of kings who were machtiei harabim and therefore don't have a portion in olam haba. Who were they? Yeravam, Achav, Menashe. The Gemara goes through the story to explain what they did wrong and why it is they don't deserve a portion in the world to come. Great. Now, you'll notice Achaz is not on that list. Can it get worse than him? Achaz defies the word of the Navi. Achaz basically shuts down the Beis HaMikdash. Achaz sacrifices his children to Avodah Zarah, burns them alive. Achaz encourages the entire Jewish community to go away from serving HaKadosh Baruch Hu and to now serve Avodah Zarah along with him. So how is it, asked the Gemara, that Achaz is entitled to a chelek l'olam haba if this is the way he lived his life? The Gemara answers very simply. Number Yud Aleph, says the Gemara, Mipnei ma lo manu es Achaz. Why is Achaz not included in this discussion of those who don't have a chelek l'olam haba? Says the Gemara, Rabbi Yosef Amar, Mipnei shahayolo boshes panim me Yishayahu. When Yishayahu Hanavi comes to admonish him, Rashi explains, he hid his face. He was embarrassed to look him in the face. He had busha. And because of that sense of busha that he had, a recognition, wow, I've really done something wrong and I'm ashamed of myself. Because of that sense of busha, says the Gemara, Achaz, whose entire life was working in a direction against the Ribono Shel Olam, Machtiei Harabim to the nth degree, Achaz is entitled to a portion in the world to come. How big that portion is going to be, I don't know. But he is not left out of Olam Haba. Because in the end of the day, Achaz had some busha. Achaz was willing to feel ashamed of what it is that he did. As we said, someone who's at their lowest point has nothing more to be ashamed of. Someone who realizes that life is worth living because there's something more I can do, something positive. They have some busha, they have some shame. And that's the way to lead their lives in a proper direction and be able to turn things around. Rav Hirsch writes in Parshas Bereishis, when we talk about Adam and Chava, it says, before they did the sin of the Eitz Hadas, v'lo yisboshashu, they were walking around unclothed and there was no shame. It was considered to be normal. And then suddenly everything changed. Suddenly, they do an Avera, and now all of a sudden, they have to cover themselves up. Why? Listen to the words of Rav Hirsch. Hashem Yisbarach Nata Bechazdo, in the kindness of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he put into our very nature, Regesh Ze Ba'adam, this feeling in a person, Leman Yeda, that he should know, Im Eino Omed Al Hagova, if a person is not upstanding, if they're not doing what they should, Simen Tov LaAdam Im Hu Baishan, Ki Alav Lishbor Es Atzmo. We all make mistakes, says Rav Hirsch. Everybody makes mistakes. It's the Teva HaAdam. It's natural to make a mistake. We're not perfect. We're not angels. We're human beings. HaKadosh Baruch Hu knows that. But he did us a great favor, a great chesed. He gave us this ability to feel busha. You know, when you do something wrong and you say later on, you know, it was pleasurable, it was enjoyable, but why did I do that? It was so silly. You feel embarrassed. Why did I make that choice? Why did I say that thing? It says Rav Hirsch, that's a chesed of HaKadosh Baruch Hu that he gave us that feeling. It's a way of keeping us on track. It's a way of checking what it is that we do, whether we are appropriate, living life properly or not. Because we have a sense of busha, it allows us to always recalibrate and ask ourselves, am I doing the right thing? Am I doing the wrong thing? Did I say something improperly? Did I do something that was improper? It's all because we have that sense of busha. That's a chesed of HaKadosh Baruch Hu that he gave us, that feeling. And that is what happened after the chet of Adam HaRishon and Chava. HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, until now you weren't ashamed, you weren't embarrassed, but now you're going to start having the sense of shame. It's going to help you make a sense of right from wrong in life. It's going to help you understand where you should be and maybe where you shouldn't be, what kind of things you should be involved with, and maybe what you should stay away from. Or if you've made that mistake, maybe have a little busha so that next time you understand how embarrassing it was that you were found there, that you were doing that, that you were involved in such a thing. As we celebrate Lag BaOmer and we think about the Hilula of Reb Shimon ben Yochai, there are other aspects to Reb Shimon ben Yochai's life to think about other than mysticism. Shimon ben Yochai has so many beautiful teachings, instructions, thoughts, sensitivities that he shares with us throughout the pages of Chazal. And Reb Shimon Yochai, most prominently here, teaches us how important it is to be careful, to make sure that although it's important for us to have a personal sense of busha, to have an understanding that we always need to keep ourselves in check, but at the same time, never to go to the extreme and to make somebody else feel ashamed or embarrassed or humiliated because of something that may have happened, a mistake they may have made, something wrong that they may have done. Noach lo la'adam sheyapil atzmo lo toch kivshan ha'esh va'al yalbin p'nei chaver v'rabim. I wish everyone a